Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.
I do want to say, John, one of our big concerns is we don't want to leave any communities behind, and we are concerned about the ability of low-income or otherwise disadvantaged communities to participate in this program going forward.
After a series of starts, stops, and outright confusion over the future of rooftop solar, California regulators have released their latest proposal to reform the state's net metering program. The process known as NEM 3.0 has pitted advocates against investor-owned utilities over how customers should be paid for sending excess solar power they've generated to the grid. And since it involves the country's largest solar market, the entire industry is glued to what happens next. I'm John Engle, Content Director for Renewable Energy World. This week on Factor This, Vote Solar's Executive Director Sachu Constantine returns to the podcast to break down this latest proposal, which is drawing fire from both sides. And for a look back at the original NEM 3.0 plan, check out his analysis in Episode 6. That's all next on Factor This from Renewable Energy World. Sachu Constantine, welcome back to the Factor This podcast, a repeat guest.
Thanks, John. Glad to be back.
Yeah. So now that we're recording, you literally, I guess, virtually stepped out of the meeting with the CPUC for a hearing to take responses and feedback on this net metering 3.0 proposal. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, what would you say has been the general industry response in this, you know, several days since the draft proposal was released? What are you hearing from the industry just based on, you know, this most recent hearing at the CPUC?
Yeah, look, I think there are some good aspects to this new proposed decision, but there's still a lot of anxiety about some of the details. As you know, any business that's out there trying to serve customers in this market is worried about the bottom line. And there are some important details, granular pieces of this decision that the industry is concerned about. That said, I think I heard a very positive tone that the commission was adopting principles that we all could try to live with. But I think those corrections, which we can get into, are going to be really important.
Yeah, and we will get into that. And just one more point on sort of the theme of the proposal or the theme of the reaction to it has been that no one is completely happy, whether you're on the advocacy front or you're, I guess, representing investor-owned utilities who, you know, throughout this process have been, for the most part, at odds. Both seem to have some problems with how this is shaking out. And I guess, you know, from a high level or even an outsider's perspective, maybe we do want whatever we settle on to not be, you know, wholly loved by any one side. Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that analogy is useful, right? That if you've angered both of the parties in a contested proceeding, you're probably somewhere where you ought to be. Where I might not agree with that here is that this crisis that we're trying to address, the climate crisis and the energy poverty and energy burden crisis, these are extremely important. You can't just split the baby here. We do need to get to a stable, forward-looking position. And I think we are getting to that. I think there's some corrections that need to be made, particularly with respect to low-income and disadvantaged communities. But we feel that the commission's proposed decision is moving us in that right direction. What we're trying to argue, I think, both advocates like Vote Solar and the solar industry, we're trying to say, here are some ways that we could improve this decision. Let's find ways to improve it. I think in the end, of course, you're right. Not everybody's going to be happy, but by and large, this puts the possibility of a strong, forward-thinking decision in our sights and certainly possible by the time the final rolls around in December.
Well, one of the reasons I really wanted to have you back on the podcast, because when we spoke nearly 5 months ago now, you made a point to say, look, we know that something has to change. You know, the business as usual format that led this market to become one of the largest in the world worked for that time. It may not work for the next 10 to 20 years. And so I did appreciate Vote Solar and your approach to what is a contentious conversation, saying there is some give here. And so as we get to some of those more granular points, like you were saying, are there three or four core elements, without necessarily weighing in on the merit, that you take away from this version of NEM 3.0, or I guess we call it 3.1 at this point? You know, what should listeners be really looking out for as the main components?
The main components are, as the solar industry and the advocates like Vote Solar have agreed to, is that we're moving away from retail compensation for the exports from rooftop solar. We're moving towards a value of solar approach, an avoided cost approach that says, hey, we're not going to pay full retail. We're going to reduce the cost down to what we think it's worth on our grid. That's the main takeaway, and we've all agreed to that. We're also moving to time of use rates. We are all entering a world, whether we're solar customers or not, whether we're trying to electrify our homes or we're a few years out from that, because that is going to happen. We all are entering a world where we're very sensitive to the time and the manner in which we use energy. So these time of use rates and, you know, the broad approach to the whole rate base is another feature of this decision that we should look to. I think that's important. Those two things together mean that we will be avoiding any of this cross-subsidy going forward. I think the other big elements of this are, there is no solar tax. We have not singled out solar customers for any punitive treatment. We have protected
the grid access fee. The grid is what you're referring to.
That is exactly right. So solar customers will face the same fees and charges that all other customers that are just like them face, just like energy efficiency customers would face or demand response customers would face. That's very important. We're treating legacy customers as legacy customers and preserving that value proposition over time, and I think really setting the stage for a clean energy future that is balanced between distributed resources like solar and storage, and that storage piece is important, and larger utility scale resources. So I think there's a lot of good to be seen in this decision. I do want to say, John, one of our big concerns is we don't want to leave any communities behind, and we are concerned about the ability of low income or otherwise disadvantaged communities to participate in this program going forward.
So expand on that, because that gets us into the conversation, or the piece of the conversation where we talk about the fixes that you would like to see before a final decision is made. Bundle in there some of the recommendations or points that you shared with us back in June. You wanted to see a glide path, a transition to get us from NEM 2.0 to whatever is this next generation. I know you wanted to see more of an incentive for residential solar adoption. Based on some of your concerns even 5 months ago and the concerns that you have with this existing version of the proposal, what do we need, in your opinion, to see change before we get to the final version?
Yeah, the biggest change that we would like to see is, well, there are two, really. One is the eligibility criteria for the low-income portions of this. Right now, the commission is suggesting that only CARE and FERA customers, those are the low-income rate programs in the state of California, that only customers on those programs get to qualify for the low-income incentives. The problem is that millions of California families who are below 80% of the area median income, that includes many tribal populations, communities of color, low-income communities in the Central Valley and elsewhere, they are not in CARE. They're not participating in CARE. They may not be eligible for CARE. So we're missing a big portion of the population. That is the biggest change that we see. Compounding that problem is that they're using very low installed costs for rooftop solar. They're using about $3.30 per watt installed. Recent market trends that show supply chain impacts and other impacts suggest that the cost is much more like $4.24 a watt installed. So using those inputs, you would really change what the low income incentives are, these adders that might be included. That is really important. In a general sense, we did get a glide path. The glide path is a little steep to start. It shows an immediate drop off of about 3/4 of the value to solar customers and their export. That seems a little steep because part of the mandate here is to reduce any cost shifting or cross subsidies, but also to ensure a sustainable solar market and a sustainable transition from solar only to solar plus storage. That's where we're headed. We know that. The glide path is good. We think you could adjust the angle of that glide path a little bit and come out with better outcomes for both the solar industry and for the grid and ratepayers in the state of California. Those are really the main elements. There are some details around the way VNEM is treated, the way that commercial and industrial customers are treated. And we're looking forward to analyzing a little bit more and coming up with some good suggestions for how to reform that. Those are significant problems, but I think that they're addressable with some minor modifications to this decision.
So there were a number of stops and starts and pauses and closing of dockets and reopening of dockets. And this last year has just been kind of crazy. And the industry at large is just sitting here waiting every day for a press release from the CPUC or a docket update to tell us where we're going. As we know that, the California market does shape the broader U.S. Residential solar and storage market.
Absolutely.
Just given what this proposal looks like and the changes that were made since, the early summer, I guess, do you think the CPUC has been responsive to the market's concerns?
Look, the delay was unfortunate, but I would argue it's better to have gone slow and go far than have rushed any decision. So I would have loved to have seen an earlier decision. I would have loved to have seen a clearer framing of the problem here. But here we are. We are going to move forward with whatever the outcome of this decision is. We are going to move some questions to other proceedings. There's a lot of value that we have to discuss for a high distributed energy future. But this is responsive. Not yet fully responsive, but responsive to many of the industry concerns. In the oral arguments today that I did just come out of before the commission, I heard a lot of strong perspectives from farm users, from commercial users, about how we could modify this proposal to make it more effective. And, quite frankly, I think there's some good arguments on the table about what we can do. And I am generally pleased with the caveat that I really, really think we need to focus on how we make this accessible to low-income and otherwise disadvantaged communities.
And we usually focus on the resi market when we talk about the net metering program. But do you mind expanding a little bit more on what we heard from, the CNI space?
Sure. Well, originally... Originally, there were very little changes proposed to the CNI tariffs. Analysis has shown consistently that there is nearly 100% cost recovery in the rates for CNI because of demand charges, for example, for grid costs. So there really wasn't much of a problem for CNI to begin with. What happens here in this decision is that you have no extended period, no extended transition period. They don't get the adders. And the analysis was based again on some flawed inputs around costs, kind of conflating small commercial with middle-sized commercial and industrial. So we'd like to see some of those inputs cleared up. We'd like to see the small CNI space, especially given the runway for churches, for schools, for community centers to really take advantage of the current climate around community solar and the federal monies coming through, take advantage of that and put those resources in for renters and for other communities that could not otherwise install rooftop solar on residential homes, for example, and also make sure that those CNI customers themselves, big box retail, even mom and pop mm-hmm. shops are still able to enter into the space. So I think it's a matter of questioning why the CNI was kind of cut out of some of the transition elements that were afforded to the rooftop solar. I think we can answer those questions or with everybody's concerns before the final decision is made.
Do we get any clarity on the timeline going forward, or is it still this wait and see and wait for the docket to update each day?
No. The clarity is certainly there. We took oral arguments today. The final decision will be put out in December, probably to take effect either immediately or within 30 days, maybe by the first of the year. So we are getting to a point where there is very little uncertainty, actually, in this market going forward.
Well, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on who you ask. I really enjoyed talking to you because it's clear that you have concerns and there are important issues that you are still working on, but you don't come with the hysterics of the sky is falling all the time. You know, a few months ago, it from some corners of the industry, it would seem like the sky was falling and that the industry was about to implode due to what the CPUC was proposing. So give me the Sach panic meter, given that you do keep a pretty level hand. Where do you stand on kind of this overall position we're in?
Yeah, well, John, I appreciate the question. I don't want to underplay the seriousness of too steep of a drop in the compensation. We know successful transitions are orderly. They move clearly from one place to another. So I don't want to devalue the industry's concern about having that orderly transition. What I do see in this decision, and my panic meter is, I would say it's at, you know, moderate levels. The fire danger is moderate right now.
Okay.
But what I do see is some acknowledgement of the behind the meter consumption being untouched, there being no punitive charges on solar customers, and there being a glide path. What we would like to do is adjust that glide path, make sure that the right inputs are there so that the adders in the transition are properly calibrated to the market. These can have really devastating impacts on a growing employment sector in the state of California, and to your point, across the country now, because this will have ripple effects. This can also really either enhance or slow down our progress towards a climate-friendly energy future. We know that distributed solar and storage will play a key role in keeping the lights on and maintaining the reliability and ultimately affordability of our grid. We best start now. We see the crisis around us. If you ask me about my panic meter about climate, the dial starts turning up a bit. I am very concerned about the runway that we have to make real significant changes in order to address the worst effects of climate change. What I see in this proposal is the right direction and real opportunities to make big steps forward. And I want to emphasize that.
So let's close out then talking about those ripple effects. What do you expect to see in other markets around the country based on this proposal? I know it won't be an overnight change, but Vote Solar does have advocacy operations in other states. You are not just focused on California. So what could we potentially see? Is it a shrinking of those national footprint companies?
Look, if there is a really negative decision here, certainly that's a danger. But what is very positive about this, and I've mentioned many of them, right? We're moving away from the idea that we should penalize solar customers. We should try to take advantage of the investments that they're making because they can help us build a better, cleaner, more reliable grid. That principle is going to echo from California out to other markets. I think the idea that we are protecting legacy customers and that, you know, they helped to bring us to the point where solar is affordable, that's an important lesson for other states to learn as they are moving through the stages of solar deployment and clean energy development. So I think if we take those as a whole and we recognize that, you know, every state, every jurisdiction faces different costs of installation, maybe some different regulatory or other kinds of policy barriers, the principles that are coming out of this, that we should preserve solar growth in the solar market, that we should align the costs of solar programs with the benefits to ratepayers, and that we should really, really encourage a stronger DERS deployment. Those are great principles for us to carry out into other markets. And we think that there will be positive effects on other markets if we are successful in getting a good decision here out of California.
And just to close out on more of a personal note, what have the last 6 months been like for you taking over the executive director role and really just getting right? I mean, you've been involved in policy for a long time, but now at the head of the organization, I'm sure it's a bit different.
It is a little different, John. And it's been exciting. There's no doubt. I am so proud to be part of this organization. You know, part of the reason that I feel there's a good decision on hand here or possible to get in California is because of the work of an incredible staff in California. When I look at what we're doing in Michigan right now, in Minnesota, in Illinois, looking to do in Indiana in the future, we're entering into Pennsylvania. We've got work in Georgia and the Carolinas. It's amazing for me to be on this team. You know, if anything, I am in awe of my team and my staff and hope that I'm living up to the expectation of leading us into the next generation of solar advocacy and leadership. It's been a challenge. There is no doubt. This environment is difficult. We are a growing staff. I am so excited to talk to you, John, I have to say, because this is when I really get to talk about policy a lot of the time. Yeah. I'll be honest, my job is about making sure that this organization is well fed and well managed. And that doesn't leave a lot of time to talk about some of these really fascinating issues about electrification and rates and what our future is going to look like. And I'm looking forward to that in these next 6 months when we've got a lot of the basics already under control.
Well, you're doing a great job and it's always great to talk to you. So Satru Constantine, thank you so much for joining the podcast again.
John, thank you. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Factor This podcast from Renewable Energy World. Factor This is a production of Renewable Energy World and Clarion Energy. Join us every Monday as we break down solar's most important topics with industry leaders who actually move the needle. And please leave us a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Factor This from Renewable Energy World. Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.